One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We're still fighting for this title. And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Hello everybody and welcome to another edition of The Warm Down. This is Stephen Howson. This is my dad Craig Howson. You can go and follow him on Twitter at that address as well. This is the man responsible for what has become a 27 year obsession so far, and hopefully there's many more years to come in that. This is me as a 5-6 year old, not quite sure when this was taken. That's exactly what I look like now without a beard, so there'd be no chance of us shaving that, just a little bit lighter red. So yeah, 27 year obsession. Took me 1990 was my first game. We're going to get into when your first game was, because there's a bit of a controversy about when your first game was.
I believe so. But then it's down to memories, isn't it? And I remember 1967. Apparently, my first game was 1965.
Yeah.
But I haven't got a clue.
This is what my granddad said. So I had my granddad on a podcast, one of everybody's favourite guests. Definitely going to get him on again soon because he's one of my favourite people to talk to about United as well. So yeah, granddad said that your first game was 65, and he was adamant about it because he remembers the cantilever stand at United had just been built prior to the World Cup, which was in 66. So he was like, had to have been 65. And
no, my first one is the 0-0. We drew 0-0 with Stoke. We'd played West Ham the week before. Smashed them 5-1 or something like that.
To win the league.
And then the last game of the season at Old Trafford, you get presented, which is now the championship. And all the team are dancing, Nobby Styles with his shirt on, back to front, and no teeth in. And he's dancing around the pitch. Now that's my first game, to me.
Well, that's what you remember, though. But what do you guys think? Because my first game was Southampton, 1990, September 1990. Actually, this week, 1990, 27 years ago. I don't remember it. I don't remember any specific thing. I don't have the memory of like walking up the steps and seeing the green pitch and smelling the smells. When I think back, it's all just mashed together from those first couple of seasons. And we was in the Stretford end for several parts because I remember. I had the little red woolen gloves with Man and United across the knuckles, and I've got a memory of me having them next to my face with my head shoved through the railings, my head going nowhere near them railings now.
Yeah.
But the railings on the Stretford End weren't red; they were like a burgundy.
Yeah,
and that's a memory I've got. Yeah, because they've been painted so many times as well that the big rust bubbles was all painted over.
Yeah,
but I've got a vivid memory of looking at my hands on the Stretford End railings. Now there used to be a barrier. So you had the crash barriers, like, odd ends all over the place, didn't you? Yeah. But then it was one right across the front of the Stretford End.
Well, it was a little wall.
Was it a wall?
It was a wall, but like a little bit of a picket fence on top. And then what they did, they put the railings in front of that. So, yeah, there was a round bar.
Yeah, that was it.
That, like, either people leaned on to watch the match or
put the kid on.
Or we put the kids on. You know, right, sit on that, dangle your legs there. You're still inside the railings.
Yeah,
no one's going
to
bother you.
You would hold onto the railings, your face mashed against them, you'd be kicking your legs through the railings. I remember, there's things I remember. That, I remember the piss behind you, because it was like a river of piss at the bottom of the terraces.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember there was a chocolate
rain.
Bar.
It was rain, that's all. It was rain.
That was pissed. I remember the chocolate bar with little footballs on the squares, with really shit chocolate.
Yeah.
I remember the pint glasses had the old United badge on them, plastic pint pots with the old United badge on them. I remember the Stretford End back then was really fucking dingy in the concourse, like dark, proper dark, and just concrete. There was no colour or anything.
Tunnel in the middle, through, and then it just, it wasn't wide.
Bare bulbs. I remember bare bulbs.
Yeah, and it was high up.
Yeah.
It was high up as well. So, it was probably like 40 watt bulbs. But 10, 12 foot up in the air.
Because I remember the difference of, because we used to sit in there, standing there, and then we was moved into North Stand, and I don't remember the concourse of North Stand, and I don't remember the concourse anywhere else, but once the Stretford End was built for the start of the Premier League season, or being built, because we was in it during that first Premier League season, because I remember the Packamax that we used to have to wear to sit in the fucking off. Rain.
Yeah.
What an idea that was to build a stadium in Manchester with no fucking roof in December. But I remember the first time going in the Stretford End, once it had been redone, and they had this plastic red flooring, and it was like, whoa, this is futuristic. And it had fluorescent strip lighting, so it was bright. And I can remember the contrast of the two, of how shitty them strip light bulbs. Honestly, just think of the worst basement you can think of in the world. That was it. It was that.
Yeah, you had it there. That was, well, that wasn't just the Stretford End.
That was the whole ground. But that's all I remember. That was all I remember.
Because the difference was the scoreboard end. Now, that was a wider... It was a concourse. Obviously, when they put a tier on it, they put stairs up the middle of it. But it was a wide concourse.
It still is a wide concourse.
There, it still is now, yeah. But they've got stairs up the middle of it, going up to the other tiers. But three quarters, if you like, of the ground was, well, maybe not the cantilever side, or what you call it now, North Stand side, because it was relatively new compared to the Stretford End and the South Stand. Now, these parts of the South Stand, that all they've done, they've took the bulbs out and put fluorescents in. Still as wide as it was 40, 50 years ago.
But the tunnel is the only original part of the stadium, isn't it, from 1908 or 1910, is the original, the old tunnel, the old not the tunnel. Current tunnel.
Yeah,
the old original tunnel, which is still there on part of the tours that you can go on. That's still... and it survived the bombs as well, because it's like 2 foot of fucking concrete, and it's like a concrete block with an hole through it.
Yeah, but don't forget, you've also got whatever of concrete above it.
Yeah, and you would have had that
steps
well.
And everything else, yeah. But yeah, when you first walked into there, you know, if it's a bright sunny day... Not many in Manchester, granted.
Opening day, usually, maybe, or last couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah.
But sometimes.
You're walking in there in November, December, January. All right. And you went through the turnstile, and you're like, get your eyes adjusted.
It's how dark it is.
Yeah, because it was dark. And it obviously, everyone's in red or red and white or whatever. And yeah, you couldn't, if it was all big overcoats and everything, you didn't know they was there. You're knocking into him, and all of a sudden you see a red and white scarf. Right, sorry, mate. You know, and that's how it was like. You know, kiosks for bars. It's just a piece of wood. Piece of wood with an opening in the wall. And there was, you know, passing, like you say, plastic pipe pots out and pies out that you couldn't handle. You know, you try to stick in your pocket and get
Did
through a
Did they still
crush.
Have them that up now? Because now, if you buy a pie at United, you can't eat it till half time, can you?
And that's only if you put it on the concrete. Yeah, you can't keep it in your pocket. If you keep it in your pocket, it's still going to burn you at half time.
So you're still hot then? They've always been that hot.
Yeah, they've always been that
nuclear
hot.
Nuclear hot.
But the only difference is then, you got it pie open, one in a sealed bag. You know, you got it from the chipper. You know, open, foiled. In your hand, there you are. You know,
fuck!
Yeah, I want a meat and potato pie. There you go, and there's your pint. Do one, next. You know, it was primitive compared to what we're watching now. But that's not just United.
No, I mean,
how many times have we got on Main Road? It wasn't even inside the ground, it was outside the ground, next to the toilet. and it was a caravan, or a glorified trailer, if you want to call it that.
In
it
America,
wasn't even brick.
Actually, when we went to the Giants game, me and Ginny went to the San Francisco Giants game, that had like mega stores. They had a vintage wine bar in there as well, which was a bit much. They had mega stores in there, which, you know, kind of makes sense inside the ground. But I think baseball is a more transient thing. Like, it doesn't hold your attention like a football match does.
It goes on forever.
Yeah, because it just goes on for ages, yeah. So there's people... I figured it out. American sports, and baseball in particular, is mainly about fucking eating and drinking. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and there's a lot that they need to keep you entertained with. But when we went to watch the American football at the Rose Bowl was, boom, there's your terrace. And then... everything else, including toilets, was outside the ground. Like, I mean, it's LA as well, so it's hot anyway, so they've not got to worry about weather so much. But everything was in porta cabins.
But you got no shelter either.
No. Oh, and I got burnt. I've probably still got the vest marks on me from then. I was in the sun for like 12 hours. But the So you've got like the bowl, and then around the bowl is like a fence with turnstiles built into the fence. So you just walk through the fence almost in a turnstile. So you give me a ticket, and then you're in the complex, if you like. And then inside the complex, there was people selling like, there's people selling signed poster, not signed, just stuff you get at Sportsman's, like we've had at the Sportsman's dinners, where it's like a framed shirt or a framed boxed helmet,
signed and whatever.
But for like hundreds of dollars and stuff, you're like, who's fucking taking that much to the match?
Yeah.
And what you're gonna do with that while you're watching the match?
Yeah.
And just under your arm or something, like. Yeah. But that was all outside the stadium. The stadium itself was just a concrete set of terraces and stairs, and that was it. And everything else was outside the ground, like in the parking lot almost. It was. That's why I like experiencing other stadiums to see what the crack is. The Emirates, for the shit that Arsenal give them, you can understand on one hand why they pay so much, because the concourse, same as Wembley, the concourses are massive, there's plenty of drinks that are well thought out queues to make sure people are in and out nice and fast. They had a prayer room at the Emirates and everything. I mean, the facilities wise, totally different. But let's go back all the way to that then. So you don't remember 65. I think that's a, I think it's a good point. If you don't fucking remember it, can you class it as your first game? Because I think you can. I took Jaden at 14 months. He's not remembering fuck all of that. When would he consider his first game?
Yeah, everyone by Jaden remembers that. Because, like you say, 12, 14 month old, and we beat Wigan 4-1.
4-0.
4-0, yeah. Well, one of his first two or three games, we won 4-0.
Yeah. Yeah, we won 4. And then we took him to the, I think it was the same, it was around the same time, the 4-1 loss against Liverpool. He'd seen a lot of goals in his early days anyway.
Yeah, he did. He did, yeah. But I can't. I know my old fella is adamant it was 65, but not got a clue. I cannot, got no recollection whatsoever of 1965.
I love that Old Trafford is the same Old Trafford that Grandad went to in 1950, that you went to in at some fucking point in the 60s. That I went to in 1990, that Jaden's gone to. And if we was ever to leave Old Trafford, I think we lose a lot on the back of that. This is the grass, all right, it's been reseeded 25 times since, but this is the grass Duncan Edwards was walking on. This is the grass that Bobby Charlton scored. This is the mud that Bobby Charlton scored them goals on. This is the mud that George Best used to get hacked down in. This is, I think, the history of United really starts post-war with Busby, doesn't it? And I know there was obviously something that happened pre-war. We had a league title. I think we'd won the FA Cup a couple of times. But really, Manchester United is Manchester United post-war. Right?
Post-war, yeah. Yeah. From your Busby, Jimmy Murphy, obviously, from there, they kicked on.
Well, that's when we became a special club, isn't it? Because with what Matt Busby did, the tragedy at Munich, and then the rebirth of the club for that European Cup in 68.
Everything, remember when Fergie said it's going to take us X number of years to do this, and it'll take us X number of years to bring a youth team good enough to win a title. Well, in a similar way, Busby had done that. Him and Jimmy Murphy had whatever kind of plan. In them days, obviously not as well publicised as the Fergie thing, but they set off with a plan. 8-10 years before, you know, just after the war, you know, Murphy had been with Wales and all the rest of it. This is what we're going to do. And they brought them lads. Now, don't forget, 56, 57, you know, they was there. They was up there.
Oh, semi-finalists of the European Cup. We was on course to break Real Madrid's stranglehold on that title early doors.
At round about the same, the year they died, was World Cup year, and there were six or seven of them lads I'd have been in. Pelle wouldn't have made his name, not against Duncan Edwards. He'd have been laughing at Pelle.
Duncan Edwards was second or third as a defender, as a 19, 20 year old defender in the Ballon d'Or rankings the year he died, or the year before he died, and he was only getting better. Those couple of years preceding the years that he died, he was doing national service at the same time as playing for United, and he was playing over 100 matches in a season. And you think about some of the distances that players had to travel then and had to travel now, and it wouldn't have been first class. Trains to London are going to take 7 or 8 hours, aren't they?
How much footage have you seen of, you know, obviously black and white footage of the players turning up at Old Trafford? 56, 57, 58. So end up on bikes.
Yeah, some of them was on bikes, yeah.
Or on the back of a bus.
Yeah.
Well, you know, getting the buses.
Ray Bobbins, the guy that you've seen on Full Time Devils, he's got some good stories about getting the bus with Nobby Styles and stuff like that coming to the match. That's fucking ace, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's what he used to turn up.
All right, sounds in a bit.
Yeah. Have a good game today. And he'd walk down, you know, he'd walk down Warwick Road, Busby Way, whatever you want to call it these days.
Was it Eddie Coleman used to just live on the other side of the...
Well, they all used to lodge. Duncan Edwards, Eddie Coleman, you know, just down in Stretford. Just down near the precinct, or what is now the precinct in Stretford. And they used to just get the bus up. Yeah. Get the bus up, Chester Road.
It's about a mile.
Jump off at the top.
Probably not even a mile.
And then, half the time, kick a can down between them with the fans. And then, you know, all in their overcoats and all the rest of it. You know, that was the style of the footballer that day. You know, chill, babe, overcoat.
I think Grandad mentioned something about that on the podcast that he did with Grandad, where he was saying they looked like fucking... Even though they were still on shit money... relatively compared to today, at least they still look like movie stars. They had the big, do you know, like what I would call a 40s gangster style,
the big overcoat
with the hats and that,
with the trilby on.
He goes, they would look the bollocks. He goes, they look the shit. He goes, it's like a, you know, a 10-year-old 14-year-old looking at them.
They had that
aurora
about them. Yeah because, you know, his dad and his dad before him, you know, a stud, you know, worked on the docks all week and then come across the ship canal over the bridge and gone and stood. 9 times out of 10 the old dock lads used to stand on the open end, the scoreboard end, every Saturday, Wednesday night. Half of them still black, not even, you know, had a chance to get home, and they'd come straight from work, you know, right into the terraces.
One of the reasons why football kicks off at 3 o'clock is because it was a half day on Saturdays. When people used to work 6 days a week, and instead of finishing at 5 or 6 o'clock as normal, they would have a half day. And one of the things that they did with the half day was form sports teams, so they still have essentially stayed together, and that's why, you know, Lancashire Yorkshire Railway, Newton Heath is what we began as. And a lot of them traditions still exist. Obviously the advent of football's on 7 days a week now with the Friday night football stuff, it is different.
Well, you can, you know, the likes of United, obviously not this year, we're not playing Thursday. That is not the future. That is not the future.
Fucking hate it.
But we can play Friday, you know, due to the sky.
Every day, but yeah.
We can play every day.
Premier League's got Monday to, well.
Well, Friday or Monday. Friday to Monday. Monday.
Champions League.
You know.
Thursday's off this year.
Yeah, no more Thursdays. No more
Although
Thursdays.
There is a possibility that you can move on to Thursdays if, what's the fucking reasoning?
If there's a postponement of your game.
If it's a postponement of the game, and I think it's if you're playing a team and like City draw a team from the same sort of city, there's a potential that one of those games can get moved depending on that city. Like if you, for instance, draw a team in London or something like that, I think they have to play one on a Wednesday, one on a Tuesday, one on a Thursday, depending on what the schedule is. But there is a potential, because there was Thursday night Champions League games last season for some reason. There weren't many. I think it was in the group stages. There was only a couple. But there was a couple of ones.
I thought that was one of them was postponed on the Wednesday night because the pitch was waterlogged.
City had that last season. City might have had that last season.
And then he moved it.
I think there was one. But yeah, so you still could fuck up and end up on a Thursday. But by and large, yeah, I mean, do you think that's a good thing? Do you think that's a bad thing? Does it matter so much? Do you think the tradition of Saturday 3 o'clock is a big thing that matters? It has more or less
gone. It's gone.
We could. You know. We probably got more Sunday at 4 than we have Saturday at 3.
Well,
last season we definitely did, but I mean, even this season.
You weigh up this season up to now and look at the fixtures for September and October, which I think are already out.
Oh, God, we've seen September's brutal.
We haven't got any. We haven't got a 3 o'clock kickoff.
Haven't we?
Nope.
We've got 15 bastard games.
We've got dinner Saturdays, half five Saturdays, dinner Sundays, 4 o'clock Sundays.
Got a midweek every week as well.
Well, now it starts, doesn't it? You know, now till
Champions
December.
League Cup's back in the mix, yeah.
You know, and obviously the League Cup's in it as well. And then you start in, obviously you get through the Champions League stages, group stages, then you start in January, you've got the FA Cup in the mix. That's when you start trying to fit league games in as well.
And then your knockouts of the Champions League all being well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're in for some fun. This is where it doesn't even feel like we had a break over the summer with the transfer stuff we was doing with Full Time Devils. It's been relentless, and then now we're right in the meat of the season already. Again, it doesn't feel like we've had 5 minutes off. If someone told me June and July was a myth, I'd have believed you. I was like, yeah, whatever, yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
What happened?
It wasn't even a tournament. I mean, it's just literally been nothing, straight in, night crack on. It's gone so fast. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, the papers have made a lot of, I don't know, newsprint or whatever about Josie's not happy when he got three players out of, you know, he wanted four. Who said he wanted four? I've never even heard him say he wanted four players.
He did say it, I think.
But is he a county slasher?
Did he know? He's got four players.
I
mean, I know there's a lot of people been kicking off about not enough depth at right back. Can you like...
I personally thought that would have been one. I thought...
You've got Damian, you've got Valencia, you've got Riley if you want to go to the reserves, you've got Tuan Zabi, you've got Jones
played,
and that.
When's he played Damian at right back?
He played twice there last season. I only know this because I was doing some research on Damian last year.
But how many times he played at left back?
14.
You know, it's as though he prefers him more on the left.
That's because Tony's bulletproof and you had no one at left backs. He played the equal amount of games at left back as anybody else last season. Blin played 14, he played 14 or 12, whichever, it was the same. And then it was like Shaw 9, Ashley Young 1 or 2 or something like that, and Rojo 2 or 3.
Must have been desperate.
Yeah, so he's obviously seen as a left back by Jose, which is strange. But yeah, I think that's largely in part down to the fact that Tony's bulletproof and reliable every week. One player of the year for a reason, didn't he?
Yeah. But I'm personally happy with what we've seen so far. It's different. It's totally different to the dross we've been watching for the 2 or 3 years before.
I did want to speak to you about this actually, because I was thinking, if you'd have told me to talk about the Moyes era today, I would have been talking about it like I'd heard it from someone else. It almost doesn't feel like I witnessed it. Like it's
hard to believe.
It almost feels like I can remember at specific points in that season. I remember the freezing cold nights when we lost back-to-back to Newcastle and Everton, I think, 1-0 at home. I think that was around my birthday in December. I remember that. I remember the Bayern Munich game. I can remember, like...
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Yeah, and I remember the Liverpool stuff. Jay took a penalty at Old Trafford that day when we got dicked off Liverpool. Yeah. I didn't see any of Liverpool's goals buzzing, so as far as I'm concerned, it was 0-0. did we get dicked off City as well at home? Week after or something?
Yeah.
I remember it, but if you put a gun to my head now and said who scored, I was like, oh, fuck, I don't know.
The only other one, and it was either the first home game or something like that, it might even been a League Cup game, was we beat Chelsea 1-0. And it was a night game. I'm sure it was a cup game. It may have been a cup game. But it was very, very early on in the season.
Remember, because was it Fulham with 80-odd crosses? Remember that?
No, it was Burnley, wasn't it, that one?
No, it was Fulham, I think. I think it was 2-0. They scored right at the end and we had 80-odd crosses. Ashley Younger had like 40 of them. So
but
no,
we'd done the same against Burnley.
We did do the same against last year, yeah. But yeah, I'm sure it was Fulham. Because I was in J-Stand because he was doing the singing section trials. So I missed the first J-Stand trial, which was against Sociedad. In terms, I didn't get a ticket in for there. I was in the ground. I didn't get. I wasn't in J stand though. And then I was in J stand for the one which was against Fulham. I've blocked out so fucking much of it. I don't remember it, but I do remember a lot of the Van Gaal season. And then obviously I remember a lot of that Fergie season which preceded it, because it was a great season winning the league that year. But it's just like, even a lot of Fergie season, if you had to say like, oh, can you remember 2005? Fucking hell, I've got a bit of shit. I've been hitting the head a lot, so.
Yeah, but I think the reason with that one.
Moyes.
The early days with. Obviously, it was changed from Fergie, and then we'd won the league. We'd gone in that season as champions. Fergie was trying to get rid of Rooney. He was trying to offload Rooney. Now, the guy's not a bad judge of a player. You know, he's dummy out a few times and got rid of players that everyone else has sort of gone, why? What's that about? You know, your Yap Stam, people like that.
He made a mistake with Beckham.
He made a mistake with Stan at the time.
Stan, they thought, was down to what he'd said in his book, not his Achilles. No, he blamed what he said in his book, but I think it was down to that Achilles injury. He also got popped for nandrolone not long after as well, so yeah, the club might have known about
but
that.
But at the same time, half the Dutch team did as well. You know, that was whenever it was being administered when it was an international duty. But as soon as Moyes came in, he gave room to the captaincy and a wage rise. I'm sure it was Chelsea. We played them early on in the season, like a League Cup game, but the window was still open. And it was made, you know, the Chelsea fans was giving it, you know, you're coming to London, you know, and doing this, that and the other. And that was all the talk. There was no way on this earth he'd just gone into Moyes, who was his mate, obviously, giving him his debut at
actually, because he'd sued him. Moyes had sued Rooney after some stuff he'd said in an autobiography. Why is a 20-odd year old writing fucking autobiographies for starters? But yeah, he'd sued him for something he'd written in his autobiography, but apparently they'd made up since then. But yeah, you're right. I spoke to Lou Macari, and Lou Macari said, yeah, the plan was Fergie was coming out in the press the way he did, because it was bizarre. They would win a game, and Fergie would be like, yeah, Rooney wants to go, and the press are like, wait, what? I'm just going to ask you about the game.
Yeah.
He would offer it up, which is not Fergie, is it? He was clearly doing it on purpose. And Macari said, yeah, the plan was Fergie wanted Rooney out the door with him, so Moyes had a fresh start. Ideally with Kagawa was the plan. But Moyes thought he would get the fans on side.
If he kept Rooney.
It was like the first win for him. And then obviously he dithered like fucking the transfer market, which Woodward got a hell of a lot of stick over from me as well. But when you look at how Woodward acted under Louis van Gaal, I mean, we did some... It might not have worked out, but when it happened, everyone was like, holy shit, bringing Di Maria in, bringing Falcao in. That level of player that we brought in, we got Ander Herrera over the line nice and early, Luke Shaw, one of the best talents in England. He did work under Louis van Gaal. He's done work under Mourinho.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you could say, well, actually, he is on the job since. It was his first window on his own. Maybe he learnt a lot in that first window. Maybe some of that was down to him. But on the face of things, you have to say, it was fucking Moyes. If Moyes had a stamp, he comes out, doesn't he, and say, yeah, we're going to go and... He's fucked off from the tour to go and sign Fabregas. And I know that Fabregas was this fucking close. We bid, they rejected it. And everyone, including Fabregas and Barcelona, thought that the third bid was... They thought he was playing the game, do you know what I mean? Yeah. They thought the bid was coming and it never came. So we never signed him. But he absolutely wanted to be coming to United. And I was told from someone very close to Fabregas, Fabregas is going to be David Moyes' first signing. Sweet. Let's get amongst it. And then he brings in Fellaini on deadline day, which at the time solved a problem that didn't exist at United. We didn't need a Fellaini. We needed players, but we didn't need a Fellaini.
But Fellaini, one of them, no.
And then he barely played him.
But we didn't get the Fellaini that had been causing havoc when he was at Everton.
Well, no, Fellaini at Everton was like a number 10, but we had some brilliant number 10s. I mean, even to his credit, actually, Wayne Rooney had his best season in recent years that first season of Moyes' season when he had that finger on his head. He was great for that, the first half of that season.
Yeah, but that was him trying to prove something.
Maybe it was, but the end result was he was great. He fell off massively, and I seen he scored a couple of goals this season, and people are saying it was a mistake to let him go. You're like, really? Who does he start over in this team?
Nobody.
I don't think he starts over anybody in this team.
No. Well, he really started over last season.
No, it was only when he was injuries and whatever needed, wasn't it? He wasn't.
Yeah. Nine times out of ten, he was on the bench.
Look at the final.
Yeah.
He literally come on to go and lift the trophy. There wasn't a tactical requirement to bring Wayne Rooney on. No. The requirement to bring Wayne Rooney on, so he lifted the trophy.
That's it.
So be it. I mean, when you look back on Wayne Rooney, it's sad the way it ends, and it's sad the way there isn't that connection with fans. And the district driving thing that's happened this week is indicative of how he's seen amongst a lot of United fans is that the guy's a fucking weapon. Like, he didn't look after himself. He's going out doing stuff like that. You've got Cristiano Ronaldo, won't get tattoos so he can give blood, doesn't drink so he can be at the top of his game. It might be a vanity thing, but he's fucking obsessed with being mint, isn't he?
Yeah.
And it is a vain thing, but who gives a fuck? He is mint.
Yeah.
He's going to go down as one of the top five greatest players of all time.
And he will still be playing at the top level.
Oh, for a few more years, at least.
In 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, for a few more years, at least.
That puts him at, what, 35? 36? Playing at that level.
And he's going to score 40 goals.
Yeah.
If you brought him to United this summer, he would have probably got you 30, 35 goals without breaking sweat.
Where's Rooney going to be in 3, 4 years' time?
If he's still playing, I'd be amazed.
I can't see him.
I'd be amazed if he's still playing. And that's the thing is, he has had injuries. He has had a career that started at 16 years of age. None of this takes away from what he achieved. No. Because he achieved some fucking phenomenal things. Because I don't want to make this a Rooney slagging session, because I know that's what some people in the comments are going to think.
No.
I think people are pissed off because they're like, hang on, Wayne Rooney at his peak was a shade, was a ball hair underneath the best players in the world. I remember some of those nights, AC Milan at home in the Champions League, where you need a fucking goal at the last minute and Rooney races away and buries one. And you saw this time and time again, that he would grab hold of a game and go, fucking give it here.
Scoring the winner. Scoring the winner against City.
Yeah.
You know, he has been, for United, an unbelievable player. Yeah, I'm one of his biggest critics, but only of his attitude, not of his what he's achieved. You know, England's top goal scorer. Now United's top goal scorer.
How many titles has he got? Is it 4 or 5?
Yeah, might be more.
5, I think. Hang on. So he got 07, 08, 09, 11 and 13. He's got 5 titles. He's got 5 league titles. He's got a Champions League final. He scored a wonder goal in the Champions League final against Barcelona, which goes under the radar because we got dicked off Barcelona, but yeah, it was a cracking goal.
The equaliser.
Yeah, he had a fucking phenomenal career. I think people are pissed off at he had this great career, but it should have been so much more because he had this ability. And it, there's maybe because it's a Liverpool thing, but there's shades of what happened with Steven Gerrard with him, that as soon as his legs go, as soon as that energy goes, it was masking so much in his play. Mm. Joe, that raw aggression, that real English quality that we like, that you don't see in the likes of Pirlo. You know, Pirlo,
yeah,
walk around
fight
while texting, yeah, but that, yeah, that fight is so high, yeah, that determination is so high. That
he would drag players, ability, he'd drag players into, yeah, games. You know, we've seen him, you know, stood in the middle. You know, we've just scored, got it back, say I don't know, we've made it 1 each, 2 each, whatever. We've dragged the game back. And he's screaming at people, fists gone, everything clenched. Come on, let's go again. That was a few years ago now. That's not the Rooney you get now.
I remember when he scored his 50th goal, breaking the record for England, and they played, it was a great documentary actually, which was about his career, and they had Bobby Charlton on there, they had Lineker on there, and they had people from United on there, and they were showing highlights of his career. And you're watching him and you're going, fuck me, how good was that player? But that player's not played for us for a few years. And Fergie was right.
Yeah.
Fergie was right in terms of it was probably time for him to leave when he left. There's this discussion going on as well about Rooney, because I still don't know where his fucking best position was. He was sort of, he wasn't your number 9 in your Alan Shearer sense. Although when he played as a number 9, that one season, was it 2011, he scored 34 goals. He was getting on the end of stuff. He scored a lot with his head that year as well.
Yeah, but he had the backing. You know, he had the support of wingers, people who can put a ball in, you know, fullbacks overlapping.
Yeah, but he did that once though, didn't he? I don't think he ever scored in the 20s in a league season. He either scored like 18 or 31. He never scored in the, he wasn't a consistent 25 goal guy.
Yeah.
He scored a lot of goals, obviously. He scored 253 goals for Manchester United, which is the most any of us have ever seen. I feel privileged to have witnessed his entire fucking career. It's annoying that it burned so bright for that period that the downslope was painful to see.
Painful to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it was painful to watch. But it was as though we're watching it.
Maybe it's unfair to compare him with Ronaldo. Like I said, because Ronaldo's going to go down in the top 5 greatest of all time. Maybe it's unfair.
They're two different people.
Yeah.
Two different people. Obviously, Ronaldo started in a Portuguese league. Rooney started at 16 in the Premier League. You know, harder, faster, allegedly. And now Ronaldo disappears back to Spain. Still playing at high level, still in Champions League finals every year.
Still scoring record-breaking number of Champions League goals.
Yeah. But Rooney's stuck at doing what he does. But he can't perform at the same level.
Mm.
I don't think his body will allow him to perform at the level.
And
you know,
I mean,
that he, you know, when he was 18, 19, 20. You know, he's had some kickings.
Yeah, he has.
You know,
but by the same rule, he hasn't looked after himself. You didn't hear of him going vegan and doing fucking yoga and stuff like that. Like, you heard about gigs at this age. Gigs at this age, you hear about him doing yoga. Scholes at this age, retire from international football to concentrate and prolong his club career.
Yeah.
Rooney, drink driving, smoking, getting knocked out in his kitchen. Now, at what point do we go, ah, that's just fucking ruin a deal with it? And at what point do you go, oh, this is frustrating, because you know when they talk about the greatest players of all time, he probably should be in that list. But he's not, and he's not going to be. And as United fans, I see so many arguments online as, does he deserve legend status, doesn't he? From what he achieved, it's unquestionable, but there was never that connection that you felt like you was getting everything out of him. If you look at the change in his personality this last month since he's been at Everton, it's so much more obvious that he's enjoying being there. And it's almost like he resented being at United.
Yeah, I think the last 12 months, because Josie's not been paying him, and he's been sat on the bench, and you know, a bit part player. Mm. That's all he's been. Has got to him. Now, he's gone back to Everton. He's been played regular. New lease of life. But then he goes and does what he does on Thursday night. So it's still the same old Wayne. You know, can Koeman handle him?
But at what point do we look at Wayne Rooney and we say, that's Wayne Rooney, and then you apply the same standards to, like, George Best, another man that was a phenomenal footballer but didn't look after himself. His career ended earlier than it should have done. Yeah. Why is one, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, but why is one seen as a tortured genius, leave him alone sort of thing, and one a fucking dickhead? Why is that?
Different generations looked at it different way.
But ultimately, it should be the same.
It's looked at because of, you know, that was late 70s, early 80s. This is 2017.
And then on the same
George Best wasn't getting $300,000 a week.
So the money
he might have retired a bit quicker if he had.
Fucking hell, yeah. So, and I always defended, because it was just nonsense, it's not true, Dennis Law relegated United by playing for City. Now, at the time,
done before.
Yeah, he didn't. And also, it was a different time. They wasn't on $300,000 a week. Dennis Law himself says, I needed a fucking job. I needed to work. But Grandad told me about something that I didn't fucking know, which is less excusable, and you go, now I'm conflicted, now I don't know what to fucking think. And that was, Busby went on holiday somewhere. This was, I think he said it was 70. It was before he left to City anyway, or it was 69 or some shit like that. And Dennis Law walks into Jimmy Murphy's office while Busby's in away on family business or some shit like that. He goes, yeah, I'm off unless you give me more money.
And so Busby Jimmy said, let him go.
Jimmy shits himself, phones Busby. Busby says, yeah, Tommy's off then.
Yeah. So, yeah, see ya.
So then he backs down and he plays on. But you think, if that happens now, if you hear of...
they've done it.
Let's say Pogba, right? Let's say Pogba walks into Mourinho's office and it gets leaked to the papers. Pogba said he's off unless you pay him more money. There would be hell to pay, wouldn't there?
Yeah.
Why is the different standard?
Yeah, but this has happened. Because didn't it happen with Rooney?
It did happen with Rooney.
You know?
But Rooney got vilified for it. And in my eyes, maybe he didn't ask for more money. The two times of the transfer request, because I want to get off Rooney. But if the two times of the transfer requests are correct, one was he threatened to go to City. Well, the other side of that is he questions the club's ambition, right? This is when we sell Cristiano Ronaldo for a world record fee, a Ballon d'Or winner, for a world record fee, and we replace him with Michael Owen and Obertan, right?
Yeah.
We questioned the club's ambition. Yeah. So that's fair enough as far as I'm concerned. Sound. If he threatened to go to City, that's a bit of a cunt move, but do you know what? If that's the meat of it, questioning the ambition, we did, so sound. And then the second one in 2013 was when his boss was trying to sell him. So you're every right to have your bottom lip out when your boss is trying to have you out the door, when Fergie was trying to get rid of him. That makes sense to me. Both of those can be excused. If Fergie was trying to get rid of him, and at the time he didn't know Fergie was trying to retire, and he's like, yeah, get me out of the club, I can't work with him, how can you go against Fergie at United? You've got to just leave. You can't fight him.
It's his way, or it was. It was his way, or no way.
See ya, yeah. So I forgive for both of those indiscretions, but a lot of fans can't. But then on the same rule, won't say anything about, you know, Dennis Law and all that. And I know the multiplication of what they're earning plays a massive factor in it, but at some point you think, are we just applying different standards here across different generations?
Yeah. It is. It's a generation thing. Like I say, you've had it with Law, you had it with Best.
I'm sure we've had it in the 80s. I'm sure we've had it in the 70s.
Probably. There's probably a few knocked on Doherty's door, Atkinson's door.
Roy Keane.
Yeah.
Roy Keane said, I'm fucking out of here unless you break the wage structure for me. Which, can you imagine a player? I mean, the wage structure is a bit crazy now, but if you can, you imagine a player going doing that today and surviving? But this is Roy Keane. Rio Ferdinand, after he was banned for 8 months for missing a drug test, goes, yeah, I want a fucking pay rise.
Yeah, yeah. And United paid him for 9 months.
Yeah.
No, that was out of order.
But again, that you, we pay the money and he goes on to be arguably the greatest Premier League defender that we've ever seen. And you go, is it worth it sometimes to sort of ignore your morals and the little voice inside you going, he's taking a piss?
But even, they know he is. They know he's taking the piss. You know, we just paid you for 9 months while you've been banned. You know, one, they should have had a little bit more respect for the club before they walked in and knocked on the door. But again, you're looking at it from the manager's point of view. I need him. I haven't got anybody else.
We're talking about, like I said, Wayne Rooney, we're talking about Rio Ferdinand, we're talking about Roy Keane, we're talking about Dennis Law. I'm sure Robbo's probably done it at some point. I'm sure they've all done it at some
point. Go back, you know, Dennis Law with Busby, Robbo with Atkinson,
George Best with every manager that we had after Busby.
But he didn't see many out, did he? But and then you look at Ferdinand and Roy Keane with Fergie.
And they couldn't have been the only ones.
No.
They're the ones that have come out. There must have been others that went in and asked for more money and it never come out, or got knocked back, or got accepted. It could have gone either way and we just never find out. There's so much you're never going to find out.
But you only ever found out about the influence of players. You know, Roy Keane was a massive influence on that United side. Ferdinand, again, another massive influence on that side. You only hear about them. You know, you don't hear about the Dennis Irwins, you know, people like that.
But you don't know if they've gone, yeah?
Yeah, you don't know if they've done it or not. But they're not the big name. You know, that half that team, a few of the games, you know, where we'd scored free kicks, penalties and everything, we'd have been screwed without Dennis Irwin. You know, one of the best fullbacks we've ever seen.
Just 8 out of 10 every week, yeah.
But he just done a job, got in the car and went, oh, not the big I am. He was, you know, chuffed to pull the shirt on, do his job, collect his money, I'm out of it.
Scholes is always sort of revered as never having caused a fuss, never had an agent, which isn't true. I know his agent, but you know, like, that's the myth that's been created about Paul Scholes. But and Paul Scholes has supposedly gone into contract negotiations and just gone, pay me what you're worth, how long is it for? That was the only thing he was asked about, which is admirable. But is it true? Is that
myth? Like you say, you know they've got agents, but whether he did the initial discussion,
because I know his agent's
and then said to his agent, sort it, you know, it's going to be this, that and that, sign it.
So what, what
I said, that's got to, you know, the only thing that Scholes did, get all the nitty gritty out of the way, and then said to his agent, right, go and sign it. But they've all got them, whether they admit to them.
It's interesting, isn't it, as where that's gone in the game, and how that went in the early days. And at what impact the breaking of the players' wage structure with the PFA had, and this sort of stuff in the 80s and all that kind of shit. I mean, when you hear about like Paul Gascoigne on the phone to Tottenham, they'd offered his mum a fucking sunbed and stuff on top of what he was getting. And I know what some of the academy players are getting at the moment. Some of the things that they get, it's not just the salary. Some of the things that they get, you go, what? Really? This is the game that you're in now. There's added extras to every single thing, and you're like, it's kind of fucking mind blowing the way it's gone.
One with Gascoigne was, they've offered me mum and dad a house, so they don't have to rent one or, you know, something. But like you say, that was the little inducements.
Was they the brown envelope ones, or was they all above board? Like, because there's some mad shit goes on with them, isn't there?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know that United and City, I'm not sure if recently, but in the past at least, have employed parents, because you can't give parents money, so they get given a job, which they don't turn up for.
Yeah,
it's
and a car to do their job.
Yeah,
which is basically make sure your son
turns up for training
every day.
I know of Everton offering tens of thousands for 10 and 11 year olds to sign, to stay signed. Or given them as expenses, travel expenses, to make sure you get there, or do you need to leave work early? There's 30 grand.
Yeah, yeah, to get. You know, you make sure little Johnny turns up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock.
It's a madness, isn't it?
Yeah, but that is football. You know, even more so in the last couple of years with the Sky money.
Oh, the what's been spent in the transfer window 3-4 years ago has been trebled now.
Yeah, in one window.
I mean, mostly by Pep on his own, essentially, but fucking hell. Before we go, because I wanted to talk to you, and we're going to have to wrap up because we're having tea. I wanted to talk to you about watching United in the 70s and 80s. And how
really?
Different. Yeah. If we can briefly touch on that. Early, I know there's a long
story. Early 70s was dog shit. It was hard work. It was hard work.
For what was on the pitch?
But what was on the pitch, the standard... I mean, don't forget, we'd had, I don't know, 3 or 4 managers in the space of 3 or 4 years.
That sounds awfully familiar.
McGuinness, Franco Farrell. I mean...
Hang on. This was after we won the European Cup and the league, and then we had a load of managers after the great one retired.
Yeah.
Sounds awfully familiar, that, doesn't it?
Doesn't it just? Yeah. But no direction.
You that know, sounds familiar right, too.
Culminating in going down.
We didn't get that bad. Oh, it did, because coming out of the Champions League might as well be going down for a club of our size. That's the competition you want to beat.
Yeah. I mean, all right. We as fans, whatever, accepted, you know, right, we'll go in the Europa. You know, you've got there, you've won the FA Cup, you've got your fucking 6th place, you're in the Europa.
I didn't, I just moaned about it.
Oh, yeah. We all moaned because we had to turn up on a bleeding Thursday night. King Thursday
oh,
night.
Thursday's tea time.
Yeah. But you live with it, thinking, we've got the man now who allegedly can do something. Mm. So, all right, you put all your faith in him. All right, first time, he's delivered. You know, we won the League Cup. We've got the Europa. Now it's up to him. There's no excuses that it's not my team. This is his team.
Well,
so let's go. So
it's getting there.
We come back up out of the old second division. We get beaten in the cup final by Southampton.
That's 76.
Yeah. We're playing with wingers, Coppell and Gordon Hill. Stuart Pearson up front. And you're playing somewhat similar to the swashbuckling, you know, you want to score 3, we're going to score 4. And you've got 60,000 at Old Trafford against Blackpool. It didn't matter who it was. 60-odd thousand there every week, second division.
So
causing mayhem at every away ground that they've never seen capacities.
Well, yeah. I know United, Tartan Army on the road then.
You know, it was mental. It was mental. And then, obviously, from then, the Tommy Dot years, going to Atkinson's, and then really it's another rebuild, because Big Ron had his own ideas.
Big Ron wasn't far off though, was he?
No, no.
When you look at his finishes, the little time he was there, and the cup finals and the cups he won.
I don't know if you remember it. Yeah, there was a football, there was a strike on outside broadcasts, all the television companies. And it coincided with, I can't think of the year, but United kicked off with 10 straight league wins.
I was 3. No,
and nobody has seen them. Because it was all, you know, no
I think
TV.
It was the 85-86 season. And we was playing not long after.
Banging football. Absolutely banging football. Leathering people, going here, there and everywhere. And he had the side. He had the side all, you know, doing, all playing for each other. Alright, we petered off.
Wasn't the who have I talked to about this? Might have been Robbo I've spoke to about this. And he said the problem was he got injured.
Again.
McGrath got injured. Whiteside got injured. Basically they just had some injury prone superstars, didn't we?
Yeah.
And they got injured. And he said the problem was we might have won, I think they won 10 out of 12 of the first. He goes, but Liverpool won like 9.
Yeah.
He goes, so when we started to fall off.
Yeah, they was there.
They was there anyway.
They was there. And then we were even worse. Sort of after Christmas with like FA Cup games and all the rest of it. And I'm sure, I think we ended up 2nd or 3rd, something like that. But obviously then there was no incentives to go wherever.
Because yeah, when you look at what he achieved in that little block and then what Fergie did for those first 4 or 5 years, it's easy to see almost why the crowd was like, we've gone backwards here.
Yeah.
Because he had to strip it back a lot and rebuild a lot, didn't he?
Well, he did go from bare bones. You know, he went to the cliff. So I'm starting from here. And we'll start from here and we'll work to Old Trafford. And, you know, obviously, the 92 was there.
But it was from 90, essentially. We win that in 90. We go the League Cup in 91. We do the... Cup Winners' Cup in 91, we do the League Cup 92, and then we win the league in 93. So he built this, he'd built this role of momentum, and then obviously that really got an extra jolt with the class of 92 lads debuting in 95, 96. Cantona taking us through to that cup final.
Yeah.
Just gutted that Cantona missed out on topping out of the world the way the lads did in the treble. But would we have won the treble with Cantona in that team without sharing?
Different style of football, or we had to adjust, compensate for the loss of Eric.
Well, right, I think we need to leave it there. But anyway, thank you for joining us. I'll get my dad on again, I'm sure, at some point during the season. There's loads coming, including we're going to be moving to a studio in town very soon. So that is all very exciting. This Warm Down podcast is now available on iTunes as an audio upload. It's on its own thread, so it's just football stuff on there. So go subscribe to that, let people know about it, leave us a review on there, and as always, you can catch all these on the Football Channel every Monday. So thank you guys for joining us. Keep hitting that subscribe button. We are on course for 50k by the end of the season, and every little bit helps. So thank you once again. Thanks to my dad, and I'll see you in the Stretford End in, well, when's the next game? Next week.
Week on Saturday. Week on Sunday.
Cheers, see you later.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.